Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the first edition of the Macko and Cause podcast of 2022. And Bob and I were just having a debate. If it's among close friends, how late can you wish someone Happy New Year? Happy New Year, Bob.
Happy New Year, Matt. I said it to you. You were, I wouldn't say you were, what was your reaction? Curious. You were curious. Was that the appropriate way to greet? And I said, we hadn't really talked since New Year. And so, yeah, sure, we're friends. And I think so. And the cutoff for me, I think, is the third Monday of the month. I think you have 2 weeks. Plus a little to get in your Happy New Year's, but by the third Monday of January, it's over.
Okay. That works for me. Yes. When you, curious is the right word. Cause I always wonder about that. Also, let me ask you this. Do you correct someone when they put the S on year, you know, hey, Happy New Year's?
No, Matt, because you know me, I'm easy breezy about stuff. I let these little things slide, as you well know.
It's like Groundhog's Day.
Or Valentine's with an M.
Oh, yeah. Oh, these are all the big hits that I screw up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Nauticum Sioux.
Yeah.
We'll have to get into a lot of football today, obviously. I imagine we can talk some Leafs, although I can't imagine anyone's actually worried about the crash against the Avs. And the Raptors are really interesting right now, but we should probably just at least spend a couple minutes saying, like, how's your New Year been so far? Because it's, oh, I don't know, pretty eventful for everybody right now.
I think more people want to hear from you. Mine was pretty predictable. Before the partial lockdown or whatever the hell it is, Amy and I went to see Spider-Man in the theater. And we tried to go to a couple little local restaurants and bars to support them before everything got shut down. And New Year's was a very small amount of people drinking good wine. So that was mine.
We had a quiet and unpleasant break. And then after New Year's, we all got sick. Although we all tested negative with the rapid tests. But my brother-in-law's a doctor and he said, look, you guys probably got COVID just based on the symptoms and the timeliness of it, but we have no actual evidence and we can't get PCR tests to be sure. So like most things right now, Matt, I'm kind of throwing up my hands and saying, I don't know. Whatever we had didn't knock us on our asses. Like we were okay. Like it was like what I would describe as a medium cold. I spent a couple days shivering and feeling pretty lethargic. And by the third day, I was kind of like, you know, I was turning the corner. Fourth and fifth day, I was pretty good. And today would be day six or seven since I started showing symptoms. So, but again, like I tested negative. My daughter tested negative. My wife tested negative. But we all had symptoms. So honestly, Matt, who the F knows right now? There are other illnesses out there. We are seeing other illnesses.
Yeah, I feel bad for the other one. I feel like the common cold, and by the way, I'm not doing the, COVID's the cold. But I feel bad for the common cold. It's like, hey, what about me? I've been doing this for ages, and you're all dismissing me, you sons of bitches.
I had a lovely walk with my daughter in the park yesterday where we discussed the current state of things. And, you know, kids are pretty amazing. They see everything. And they get it, you know. They don't have the language to describe it, but they get it. It's been hard, you know. There's good reasons to go back. There's good reasons to stay out. None of this is perfect. It's clearly damaging to the kids to be home. It's clearly damaging to our hospitals to not be home. So there you go.
All right. The most important question, Bob. Did you make it to midnight on December 31st?
Yeah, totally. I watched the Lucy and Ricky Ricardo movie. I can't remember what it's called. Is it about the Ricardos? Nicole Kidman just won a Golden Globe last night for this. And my wife and I kind of looked at each other and wondered, how the fuck did this happen? Like, what is this we're watching? Have you seen it?
No.
There's some really good stuff about it. It's a cool idea. It's a cool time. It's just like, I don't know. It's like watching, I'm a little done with these celebrity biopics. It just feels like some kind of like masturbatory cosplay for the entertainment industry. It didn't really have much to say. It's kind of cool. I'm a big fan of I Love Lucy. I think Lucille Ball's a bona fide genius. Desi Arnaz is an underrated, brilliant guy. But really, Matt?
Didn't need it.
It feels like there's two movies being made right now. It's either like really great actors pretending to be aliens or superheroes, or really great actors pretending to be really other great actors.
That is, that's about 95. Yeah, you're right. That's about 95% of all movies. You know what we need to do? We need to cross them, multiverse this shit. Suddenly, Nicole Kidman as Lucille Ball is teaming up with Black Widow, taking on Thanos. How about that?
Matt, you started off 2022 by giving me a lot to think about. It's actually a pretty funny idea, the Super 2022 crossover. How we're burying the lead. Well, I mean, there's a lot of leads, but you mentioned you went and saw Spider-Man. How'd you like it? I haven't seen it yet, so no spoilers.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it looks
great. I'll just go there. It serves all masters very well. It's great. Yeah.
So I was listening to... Yeah, I'm so excited, and thank you for not spoiling it. As soon as I can, I'll see it. I had every intention of going to see it, and then everything started shutting down again. And obviously, I'm going to. But I was listening to this podcast. You talked about how these Marvel TV shows are put together, and they actually have executives in the writing room, which just never happens. But for Marvel, it does. And they were saying how they would be like, you know what? I really like this character. Why don't we make this character a big part of this story? And the writers are all like, what?
Ooh, that's not good. You never, like, it's the number one rule for good art in terms of film or TV. You don't, for the most part, you don't want the executives in the room.
You know, that was probably true when the executives were stupid, but the executives are mostly smart these days, Matt. Like, it's a different industry, obviously, than it's ever been before. And I would never have said executives in the room, but how do you debate the track record? Like, all this stuff's good.
No, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, to me, when I think executives, it's like 70s, 80s, scotch, cigars, a lot of dum-dums who want to, prove why they deserve a paycheck every other Thursday. So they go, can we tighten up the script? Can we speed it up? Let's speed it up. And then they leave the office.
There's a book out there I'd love to get for you. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't, but it's called A Martian Wouldn't Look Like That. And it's a collection of just terrible network notes over the years.
Yes. Oh, I should get that book. I know it. That's it. By the way, what a great line. A Martian wouldn't look like that.
I think it says it all. Yeah. Should we just start NFL today, Maddie? How do you not? And
how do you not?
Yeah. I wanted to go through all of the upcoming playoff games. And it seems like if we did them chronologically, it would land us exactly where we need to be to start this pod, which is the Raiders and last night's game. Mm-hmm. I'm going to clear out. Basically, cause hold the ball at the top of the key. I'm clearing out. The basket is yours.
I'm going to start by asking you a question. Did you feel like you needed a cigarette at the end of that Raiders Chargers game?
Every once in a while, there's one of those crazy games that just feels like the comparison always winds up being wrestling, because only in wrestling would they dare to do this much. Real life's always more interesting. I don't have a horse in the race because the Bills won the division. Not that it was but I'm just saying, like, that's what I cared about yesterday. I was hoping chaos. I was hoping for chaos, and I got it.
You did. The best thing that happened yesterday was somehow the 49ers came back to beat the Rams, because the 49ers have so much more talent and are more interesting than the New Orleans Saints, where it would have been Trevor Siemian with a 3-yard bubble screen to Alvin Kamara. So at the very least, we're like, get out of here, Saints. Good job getting like 9 wins with that offense. So that was the good news. The bad news, in the end, the main thing that pissed me off about stupid Brandon Staley, by the way, analytics, get out of here, analytics. get that punter on here. But the no one wanted Roethlisberger and that offense. We wanted Justin Herbert. That last second touchdown drive hitting Mike Williams for 12 yards with no time left. All the fourth down conversions he made. That team, Herbert has the skill to overcome a more talented team. That team is out, and we're about to get the constipated Steelers. But how much fun would it have been if we had ended a tie? Oh, it would have been just so lovely.
For everybody who wasn't involved with betting, I want to ask you about Justin Herbert and the Chargers, because how is that team? Like, are they the team in the NFL that most exemplifies should be in but not?
Oh, absolutely. Justin Herbert, like think about this. The Saints nearly made the playoffs with Jameis Winston, Simeon Taysom Hill, and Ian Book. Like, the Chargers, what's their excuse? They went 9-8, and they had Justin Herbert for the whole season. It's curious. You could blame some of it on injuries, but it seems like when you always say, oh, the Chargers are going to charger, well, then I have to ask, what's up with the coach, and then what's up with the quarterback? Yeah, everything first starts there.
Yeah, it feels crazy to think that there wouldn't be changes there somehow. I was listening to Bill Simmons last night, and he raised a good point about how with the Raiders, they didn't talk about John Gruden all night on the broadcast. Like, for all, like, you know, the fact that they just referred to this as this generic sort of, this team has overcome obstacles. It was almost like when Pharaoh wipes Moses' name off all the temples in Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's more amazing to me, that the Raiders made it or that the Chargers didn't.
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it's more amazing that the Raiders made it because of Gruden and then, you know, Henry Ruggs, and they had plenty. The best tight end in football last year, Darren Waller, missed most of the season. Their running back, Josh Jacobs, missed a ton of the season. To me, this goes to, and Bob, let's get old school here. First, fuck you, analytics. We're going old school. Second, leadership. Like, go back and listen to everything Derek Carr said when the Gruden situation or the Henry Ruggs situation. Like, just the emotional and intellectual maturity of that man cannot be discounted. As a passer, he is up and down, and he'll scare the hell out of you if he's your quarterback. And sometimes he scares the hell out of you if you're rooting for the other team. But this starts with the leadership of Derek Carr.
Yeah, he's an interesting figure because you want to describe him as a bad quarterback, but he's not. Like, he might be the operating definition of the pretty good quarterback. Can you think of anyone who defines, I don't think he's bad. I don't especially trust him either. I expect him to do some good things, and I expect him to do some bad things. Like, can you think of anybody in the NFL who better defines he's okay than Derek Carr?
And it's someone who's done some winning. The other one that I come up with, Bob, is Jimmy Garoppolo.
I want to get to him in a bit, because I think that's one of the interesting questions moving forward. But yes, exactly.
Yeah, Jimmy G.
Justin Herbert, I want to talk more about the Raiders in a second. I'm ping-ponging a little bit here. But I had a question that I thought was interesting, because you talked about how amazing he looked. And, you know, people compare him to a young Elway in the sense that he seems to have this incredible gift. He's still a little scattershot, but he might develop into something truly, truly special. If you had to start a team today, who would you rather have, him or Patrick Mahomes?
Mahomes.
Are you sure?
Yep. Yeah, I am still sure. Even when they lost to Cincinnati, they were down, like, they lost like two left tackles in the same game. And at least for a half or so, Mahomes was just looking so good. Like, by the way, Bob, I would go with Joe Burrow still over Justin Herbert. And we can get into that in a second. But okay, I'm still going to go. I'm still going to go Patrick Mahomes for the athleticism and just the escapability that he has a higher ceiling in that regard versus Herbert as well.
Okay, I agree with you there. Joe Burrow, interesting question. Hadn't thought of that one. I wanted to take it to the next level, which I think is much more contestable. Would you rather have Justin Herbert or Trevor Lawrence?
Oh, Herbert.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about that. That answer is allowed to change. But as of now, I'm gonna go with Herbert. Just Herbert has done more amazing things. If you want to counter the other side, Trevor Lawrence has been surrounded with, you know, a Division II college team in terms of talent, and had you know, just the whole Urban Meyer had the whole Urban Meyer debacle. And listen, Lawrence played well, and thank God he played well. We would not have had that drama if it wasn't for Jacksonville beating the Colts. But no, I'm gonna go Herbert over Trevor Lawrence, and I still have a lot of faith in Trevor Lawrence.
Let's park the Colts to the very end of our playoff look, because they are at the very end of the playoff look. Okay, so I feel like you've set it up because you've teased Joe Burrow. We're talking about the wild card coming up. Raiders, Bengals, thoughts?
I got to go Bengals. I have to go Bengals here. I think they're favored by 6.5. I don't like that number. But at some point, this all comes to an end. Like, go back and look. The amount of wins by the Raiders where it was on a Carlson kick with like under 30 seconds. Eventually that comes to an end. And I forget what NFL analyst said this, so I apologize, but I always love this line. If you watch the highlights, you take Justin Herbert. If you watch the entire game, you take Joe Burrow. And I love that. I love that, that line. And just, I think Burrow is less scattershot. I think Herbert has the higher ceiling, but the ceiling's not that much higher. Like, the interesting thing about Burrow is he does everything well, but there isn't one thing where, wow, that guy is super elite. But he's throwing you a lot of B pluses and A minuses across the board.
I kind of, it's such a great way to put it, because Joe Burrow, it's hard to get excited about him because there's nothing to get excited about. Like, when you start looking for comparables, it starts to feel hard to find them amongst the best quarterbacks, because the best quarterbacks usually have a defining characteristic that's genuinely special. Like, you could say, okay, he's tough and he grits out wins and this and that. Oh, he's a young Ben Roethlisberger, but that's not true. Like, he doesn't have, you know, young Ben Roethlisberger's legs, you know?
Nope.
So who is he then? Or is he just, like, to your point, is it almost like you went to a computer and you said, give me better than average on everything?
Here's what Joe Burrow is, but we never want to admit this. Like, you know how every quarterback's got their strength, like, you know, mm-hmm. with arm strength or dexterity and all that. Tom Brady's strength is that he stole the time stone from the Avengers. That's his. Well, Joe Burrow is kind of like a Tom Brady, where there isn't one incredible thing. There's just lots of really great things. Now, again, the proviso, I don't think I need to say he's not Tom Brady. We all know that. But that's sort of the comparable.
I do like the stolen time stone. Are you going to use that on the show, or have you used that?
I haven't yet. I might. I'm not, as anyone knows who listens, this show is basically, me workshopping gameplay. So,
well, I'm glad to be your sounding board.
Thank you. But, that's Burrow to me. He's like Tom Brady, but lesser.
Okay. We'll get to Pat's Bills in just a second, but quick sidebar. Cincinnati seems to have distinguished itself as, the cigar team. Everybody's smoking cigars. Joe Burrow's got the cigars. What's your take on cigars? And I'll jump in first, but then I'll leave it for you. I think they're gross. Go.
I love cigars. I think they got too much play, like late 90s, early 2000s. It was always used in every TV show, you know, Schwarzenegger on Cigar Aficionado. It felt like E. And what was that show, Bob? In all the guys. Thank you. Oh, God. Thank you for getting that. I was going to stumble. It felt like every episode, at least two of the douchebags had a cigar. But I will say this. I do enjoy a good cigar. But
is there such a thing as a good cigar? Yes. And I say this, like, I smoked, you know this. I was a smoker for like years. So I get it. But like, once I quit smoking and I smelled my clothes or other people's, like, it stinks. It's gross. The idea that you would, after a delicious meal, stick a stinky weed in your face and light it on fire to just top it off. Like, I get the idea of creme brulee. I understand the idea of a delicious ice wine to maybe cap things off, but the idea that you would basically take swamp mud, roll it up inside a leaf and light it on fire. I don't get that.
Well, I could simplify anything. What do you mean? You take a dead animal and put it on fire and then shove it down your gullet? Yeah, it's called steak.
But steak winds up tasting good. Like, you know, as I, Homer once said, I don't know what it was, but fire made it good.
I do enjoy it. Like, I every now and then, yes, I think that it's a delicious aromatic. It's a nice experience. It's very calming because that's part of it. Part of it's the experience of it, because when you're having a cigar, you're not doing many other things. And it makes you usually a little more reflective. And if you're, as long as you're not a douchebag, it also makes you appreciate, because you're having a cigar. It's a treat.
But it feels like, and I don't want to be that guy, although I kind of am that guy, but it feels like, as long as you're not a douchebag, but what is it about cigars that attracts so many douchebags? It feels like the,
because you could spend a lot of money. It's an opportunity to spend far more money that's needed, and it allows you to advertise, look how much money I spent on a frivolous item. And it's also, it's like the ultimate way to show everyone how much money you have when you're literally burning, you know, something expensive.
That actually is it. It's the conspicuous consumption of it.
Yes,
it's like if you had a really expensive watch, and God knows we just don't need watches. We have phones. But it's like if you constantly, if you just stood there and held out your watch and made everybody look at it, if your watch also smelled terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the douchebag with the cigar is the one who's like blowing it in your face versus the, oh, do you want to know the time? It's 7:14. Look at this. It's almost 7:15.
A cigar is the culinary equivalent of underboob.
There you go.
There you go. I'm not sure I know what that means, but it came to me and I'm riding with it.
It's a great line. I don't know what it means, but it is a great line. You know what? It's because it's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. It suddenly showed up one day under boob. I'm like, don't we have enough boob? We've got more than enough cleavage. We got more than enough cleavage. But now you've decided to make under boob.
Well,
by the way,
for years it was the zip down, right? Like, so you had side and like cleavage was, you know, where it goes. It's in the middle, right? And it's like some genius looked at it and said, what if we tilt this 90 degrees?
We need to stay here for just a second. Whoever came up with the idea of underboob, and whoever is in the underboob industry, how low do they think of men? Because basically, like not 100%, but they created this to attract men. And mm-hmm. It's so stupid. But whoever did it, they have a very low view of the male species. We're like, this will get them. Under boob.
It seems to have worked, though.
Oh, God.
Shame all right. on us. Patriots and Bills. You know a lot more about football than I do, but I do follow one team, and it's the Bills. So I'm going to throw out a statement, and you tell me if this makes sense, okay?
Yep.
The Bills have the ability to blow you away and underwhelm you in the same game.
Oh, absolutely they do. They blew away the Jets late. That first touchdown by Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs blew you away. And then there was about 30 minutes a game when you're wondering, how are the Jets close? You know, and by the way, maybe we shouldn't be upset that the Bills lost to Jacksonville. They just beat the Colts. So yes, they can absolutely do both ends of it. I look at this game, and to me, it's very simple. New England can only win if they get a couple turnovers. If Buffalo is, like, Buffalo, I think, can play a fairly conservative game, and I think they win. Actually, I feel really good about Buffalo beating New England. I think New England is a year too soon, and they don't have a very high ceiling.
I am more confident in this game's outcome for the Bills because of the Patriots than I am the Bills. The Patriots don't feel like a team to me that can pull it all together, go on the road, and win in a tough place against a really good quarterback in Josh Allen. And the fact that the defense looked so good against the Jets yesterday, it makes you feel like they feel like on the defensive side of the ball, it feels like they're peaking at the right time. The offense, though, it's just so weird, Matt. They can't run, but they also have Josh Allen, who's one of the league's best runners. So again, so impressive, totally underwhelming. They give the ball to Devin Singletary, my heart sinks. Josh Allen scampers 15 yards later. I'm like, God, he's got wheels. I watched Zach Wilson scamper yesterday, and I thought, oh, well, you know, that's good. But then if Josh Allen had it, I thought it would be 7 or 8 yards longer, you know?
is just faster and harder to take down. So all of it, like I watch Josh Allen, like he's got a receiver open down, you know, field, and he overthrows him. But then he throws that crazy touchdown pass, the first one, to Diggs in the end zone, where he's basically falling over. And the only reason people weren't more blown away is because they had to review it so many times. That conversation overtook the holy shit, did you see that conversation? So again, like I feel zero confidence that the Bills can beat like a Titans or a Chiefs. I feel really good that they can beat up the cannon fodder, like the Johnny Canines of the world from the WWF, like, you know, the Pats are the Johnny Canines, you know, but when it's time when they leave the mid card, they're going to get pounded by the headliners.
Yeah. See, I think the Pats are, let's see, I need something in the Jim DeAnville Neidhart, not Brett the Hitman Hart.
I got it. You ready? Sorry to interrupt.
Go.
I got it. Tino Santana.
Yes. Perfect. Hey, listen, he won an intercontinental belt, 100%. which is the equivalent of, you know, making in the past, other good runs.
Absolutely. Like that's you are a legitimate chance to hold the intercontinental belt, but you could never like rule over the franchise. You could never, or the promotion, I should say. There's a version of the Bills that I think can beat everybody. And we see it for about 12 minutes a game.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately they play longer than that in the NFL, and I just got no faith in them. I think Mac Jones is really interesting, though, because everyone talked about him, and mostly because, you know, he's in New England, so people talk about him. But, you know, offensive rookie of the year and this and that. And I watched the last couple of games with him. And, Matt, I swear, I feel like I've seen this movie a million times before. Rookie comes out, everyone talks about him, kind of trails off. Within 3 years, he's a backup somewhere. Like Mitch Trubisky came out to back up Josh Allen at the end of the game. And I thought, is that Mac Jones in 3 years where he's just Mitch Trubisky?
I don't think he is, only because he's got Belichick and that organization to help grow him in those critical years. It's Belichick versus Matt Nagy.
Yeah, but who's the quarterback that he had, and Belichick made him into an 11-5 guy when Brady
Matt
was
Castle.
Down there?
Okay, Matt Castle.
Maybe he's Matt Castle.
But Matt, he could be. But if Matt Castle had stayed in New England and Brady never came back, I think Castle probably has a better career than when he was cast off into, you know, because that's the thing. When you're Matt Castle, the teams going after you are these like quarterback needy teams that are usually bad. You know, like whoever goes to the Steelers at least gets a good organization around them. I have I got a nerdy final thought for you, Bob, on Buffalo and New England.
Okay, and then I'm going to give you an option. Okay, so you make your final thought, then I'm going to give you dealer's choice.
The key for this game is the Buffalo's rush defense on first down. You hold them to under 4 yards, and it's not the Damian Harris show or Rashawn Stevenson. They're the rookie running back. Like when the 49ers, when they tied the game at 17-17 against the Rams, where they ran the ball 10 straight times, or 10 straight times. If you go back and look at it, every first down run was at least 6 yards. It's easy to be Johnny running team when it's 2nd and 4, 2nd and 3 all the time. If the Bills rush defense on first down on the Pats, if they do a good job, I don't think New England has a chance.
You're probably right. And I don't think it's that nerdy considering that New England beat Buffalo and threw the ball 3 times. I know it was snowy, but I do think they probably figured something out. Okay, here's the choice. So we can either take New England and go straight, keep the chronological thing going where we go to the Bucks and the Eagles and take Tom Brady there, or we can take the Matt Castle thing that popped up and ride that right to the 49ers and the Cowboys and Jimmy Garoppolo. Your choice.
Option number 2, Tampa Philly. It's just not that interesting. Like it really isn't. Like unless Antonio Brown suddenly runs on the field, it's not that interesting. The Jimmy Garoppolo one is much more.
I feel like we're getting better. Just quick, and I agree. But quick sidebar on Antonio Brown. I think we're getting better at not rubbernecking disasters. Slowly but surely,
yes.
I think people
are
recognizing like, oh, wait, it's not like the, you know what Antonio Brown reminded me of? And like the coverage of it afterwards, because you'd see like some stuff. Oh, he's so silly, he's so this. It's like when we used to have hockey fights and the guy would be wobbling around the ice and you'd put the Benny Hill music underneath it.
Yes.
And then after time we realized, oh, wait, he's concussed and maybe permanently damaged. Maybe it's not super funny. Antonio Brown, I get it. It's a train wreck. You got to look. But I feel like we're getting better at just saying, okay, let's put that aside.
Yeah. He, by the way, both things could be true. There could be something wrong with him. And he's also a colossal asshole. You're allowed to be more than one thing. It's, that's, you know, thing in life.
All righty then. Niners and Cowboys. This matchup is actually fascinating. Cause go.
Well, okay, let's start with Jimmy Garoppolo. On the one level, Kyle Shanahan is a very smart coach. And Kyle Shanahan is like, nope, I'm still going to give the ball to Jimmy G. He gives us our best chance to win over the quarterback we gave up oodles and oodles of draft picks for. And we got the full Jimmy G experience on Sunday where, you know, a bad interception, a one ball in overtime where he badly threw behind Deebo Samuel. But we also had the touchdown drive with 87 seconds left to tie the game where Jimmy G hit everything he needed to hit. It is a wild ride with Garoppolo where he is the high-end game manager. He is the top of the level of the game manager. And I got no idea what to expect against Dallas, a team that gives up lots of yards, but they also create lots and lots of turnovers. But the fact is, in the end, Shanahan is like, nope, I'm going to put the ball in your hands. And then it's funny. I'm going to put the ball in your hands, but then I'm going to want you just to hand it off a lot. So you figure it out.
I've got a crazy analogy that just popped in my head.
Yeah.
If Jimmy Garoppolo was a TV show, he would be NCIS.
Mm.
You can't point to anything that's wrong about it. And it's basically just built there to do the job. It will never thrill you. It will, it's the kind of thing that can exist for 15 years in the NFL and nobody can remember it when it's gone.
Is Scott Bakula on that one or was he on a different one?
He was on Quantum Leap.
No. He was on one of those shows where it took place in New Orleans.
Oh, maybe. Because the franchises get so deep. Like, I know LL Cool J is kicking around. Like, I think of Mark Harmon when I think of NCIS. And
yeah. Oh,
the
no.
only thing
of
I
course,
really
of
know
course.
About that show is promos during football. Like, I don't think I've ever seen it. But I've seen a million, you know, I've seen Jim Nantz talk about it a lot.
It's the best thing about watching football. You at some point you turn and you go, there's a lot of TV shows I've never seen before.
I was watching the lineup. There was what was there? There was The Rookie, never seen.
Yeah. Yeah, there was 911, some show with 911 in it.
Blue Bloods.
The Andreas Faults or something with an earthquake. Anyway,
I think that was La Brea.
La Brea, that's it. Thank you. La Brea. Yeah. The thing about Jimmy G, they win the Super Bowl a couple years ago if Chris Jones, the defensive tackle from the Chiefs, doesn't knock down like two of his passes. Like there's something about Jimmy G I really appreciate, but I'm glad he's not my quarterback. Now, I would take him over Daniel Jones, but like San Fran has got a lot of good wins to its name. Like, you know, this is a very talented team, but with Jimmy G, for him to do it, for San Fran to win, like they need a lot of other things to go right, but they've done plenty of winning. They've gotten to a Super Bowl with him at quarterback.
Well, and there's also they play in a tough division, whereas the Cowboys play in a shit division, you know?
Yeah. That's a big one.
You know, so they've been playing big games all year long and, you know, the Cowboys have been able to feast on some pretty weak teams. So far we've got you taking the Bengals, the Bills, the Bucks. No real surprises there. This one I think is a bit of a flip because you can make a case for both sides. Who do you like in this one?
I think I'm going to take San Fran to the point you mentioned. They beat the Rams twice. They beat the Eagles. They beat the Bengals. So right there, that's four wins against playoff teams. They had very close losses to the Packers, the Cards, and the Titans. You know, those games could go other way. They have the thing that they have is, and Brandon Ayuk, and I know I'm mispronouncing his name, like he's doing better now than he did at the beginning of the year. Deebo Samuel is a special talent. George Kittle is a special talent. They've got Bosa. Like, they have got a ton. Like, they've got stars in a lot of places. If they get Trent Williams back at left tackle, that's one of the best offensive linemen. My biggest concern with the 49ers is they are weak at the corner position. And Dallas, you know, I know they're up and down, but the one thing they can do when things are working is Dak Prescott to those receivers. But on the other part, when Dallas lost to Arizona in a game that meant a lot, CeeDee Lamb and Cooper did nothing until late. So I think I'm going to take the 49ers. I'm going to take those points, but I'm going to take San Fran.
Okay, I really want to make sure we get to the Raptors. So we got a couple more games, football games to go through. So why don't we go through these pretty quick? And I'll throw you just a couple of questions. All right, so Steelers.
Yeah.
I got a hot take. The best thing that could have happened to Ben Roethlisberger is if it would have been a tie last night between the Raiders and the Chargers. So that his last game doesn't have to be him going out and losing by 40 to the Chiefs.
Agreed. Last year when they lose to the Browns in the playoffs, there's a shot of him on the sidelines where he's like, you know, breaking down and just like trying to hold back tears. And because no one likes Ben, and that's fine. He gets made fun of a lot. But yes, he is. It's better if there's a tie. He gets to be the victim. Now he's going to be the victim of four interceptions.
The inevitable question around these playoffs, I think probably the absolute biggest question is, and I borrow this from Slapshot, is who owns the Chiefs? Or by that, I mean,
owns
the Chiefs. No, by that, I mean, who the hell are these guys? Because honestly, like, if there's one team that I feel I don't like, I feel like I get Buffalo, and that Buffalo is a mix of different things. I don't know that I could put what I think of the Chiefs into one or two sentences.
They're a team that can score super fast. They're a team that relies on two guys more. Like, and they rely on Kelce and Tyreek Hill more than I think any other team relies on one or two skill guys. But the downside is if they're not 100% healthy, that's a detriment. The plus side is those guys are some of the best at what they do. So it makes sense. Their rush defense the last month has been abysmal, but I don't think it'll matter. I think KC wins. I think KC covers.
I agree with you there, too. Okay, so should the Titans get Derrick Henry back, and there's some talk that he could be available at some point during the playoffs, Chiefs basically healthy versus Titans with Derrick Henry?
You have to give the edge. You got to give the edge to Kansas City. This is not rocket science stuff, but it still just comes down to
quarterback.
Like these teams, yeah, in the end it just still comes down to quarterback. And AJ Brown might be the most talented player on the field, and I'm including Hill and Kelce and everyone else, but just when you take all the weapons that Kansas City has, I have to give it an edge there. And it's not like either of these teams have incredible defenses.
All right, McVay, Kingsbury, kooky coach you trust more?
I'm gonna go with Sean McVay. He got to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. That buys points for me.
Yeah, it's impossible not to say McVay. Although I think it's interesting that I feel like both of these guys are primed to be like that Mike Martz thing where you're a genius one day and a dummy the next. And
yep,
like let's like if either of these teams get blown out, can you imagine the think pieces about how the think pieces based on the how we overvalued this coaching stock in this guy? It's going to be everywhere.
Oh, 100% it is. And by the way, if the Rams lose in the first round, it's like, well, that was a lot of draft picks you gave up to get Jalen Ramsey a couple of years ago, and then Matt Stafford, and he trades stuff to get Von Miller. You know, the Rams, their draft cupboard is pretty bare.
The Cardinals have some guys, like if you kind of like that team, you want to see them develop, whether it's the coach, but also Kyler Murray. The league is just more fun when there's another great quarterback, and you kind of hope he can develop into that. And this is one of those chances to do just that. But it feels, to your point, I find the Rams really interesting, because if this goes wrong, there's a lot of stakes out there. I mean, Matt Stafford,
oh, yeah,
if he goes out and sucks with this team, like for years, and you know, I was a Matt Stafford truther in Detroit just because I watched them and I know how bad that team was. And when you can put up like 4,000 yard years with nobody to throw to and no running game and no offensive line, that's a pretty good case. You're probably pretty good. But you go to an excellent team
with a coach that's been to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff, to your point, and you take over and you lose in the first round, that's going to leave a mark.
It absolutely is. Bob, earlier in this podcast, you were talking about, was it the Bills? Like, who was it, that the team that can overwhelm you for like 12 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
They can simultaneously be underwhelming and amazing.
Yes. So with the Rams, can they survive the 12 to 15 minutes of actual game time, not real time, but game time, where Stafford is bad? Because there's going to be that. There's going to be those three possessions where there's the near pick, the pick, and the quick three and out. Can the Rams survive the Matthew Stafford underwhelming period of the game?
And I think we know the answer. The answer is, against a good team, probably. Against a really good team, no.
Yeah.
It feels like their ratio is the inverse of the Bills. Like, I would argue that the Bills look pretty mediocre about 60 to 65% of the game and excellent the rest of it. And with the Rams, I feel like you can flip that around. But as we've seen, like, you know, with the Bucks in the Super Bowl, like, you just need a window. And when great players get that window, they take advantage of it and they put distance between you and them, you know? So I feel like the Rams will win this game. And just based on the fact that they've got so many good players, I know that's like Captain Obvious stuff, but to your point, even though the Cardinals looked like they were prohibitive favorites for a while, they kind of proved that we shouldn't trust them so much. There's players on the Rams where you go, if I'm putting my money up, I kind of want to put it on players that have seen do it
before. Yeah,
but Stafford's not that guy. Stafford hasn't done it
before. Nope, Stafford hasn't. I don't know what the health status for next week will be for DeAndre Hopkins. And the sneaky bad injury was when J.J. Watt went out. He was having an incredible year, not only just as a pass rusher, but just his ability. Like, he was stuffing the run. And when he was gone, the Cardinals, their numbers there certainly took a big dip.
Niners Cowboys, probably the best game of the weekend?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, not just in terms of what you're looking forward to, but actually closest best, we're talking about it as the best game of the weekend. Do you think that's the case?
I would rank it them, that one number one. Arizona Rams 2, Vegas Bengals 3, Pats Bills 4, Eagles Bucks 5, and Pittsburgh Kansas City 6. Thanks, Raiders. I mean,
would you have been ashamed if they'd played for the tie? Like, not the whole time, but like once you get to overtime and you're about halfway through overtime, both teams have kicked field goals. I almost felt like at the end of that overtime, it's like, you know, the final battle between Ollie and Frazier. And Frazier doesn't come out for the 15th round.
Yeah.
If Frazier would have come out and they basically just would have clutched and grabbed and then went to the cards, I feel like that, like, just calling it a tie would have been like a shitty 15th round for Ollie Frazier.
I would have been fine in overtime when they both, you know, they both had kicked a field goal. Okay, we both kicked a field goal. And then dummy called the timeout with 38 seconds left. Like, I just wish that Staley hadn't done it. And the Raiders just ran the ball, and then the clock went zero. Tie game. We'll see y'all next week.
I saw a couple of people online just commenting, there has never been a game where two teams tried less to wind up with a tie.
It was wild.
It was. All right, let's do Jeff Pollock and get to the Raptors, because you and I have a contentious issue to discuss.
Okay, we don't do Jeff Pollock. Jeff Pollock does. Bad phrasing there. Let me rework that. Let me do that again. Uh-huh. Hey, everyone. Take two. It's 2022. If you made a New Year's resolution that you need to get your shit together, well, part of that is to be responsible, to make sure that you got a lawyer when you need a lawyer. At the very least, that legally you have proper representation when it's needed. And it will be at some point. I'm not talking about, you know, because, well, you went on another crime spree. Some point you're going to need a lawyer. Ours is Jeff Pollock. It's jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. Give him a call. Give him a contact. Throw him an email. Go to the website. All the info is there. He's been our lawyer for years, and I'll be honest about it. It's one thing I never, ever have to worry about. It's just good to have that peace of mind. jeffpollock.com. Let's get to the Raptors.
I love it when I am wrong, and because I'm wrong, fun things happen. That's how I was about this Raptors team. I did not expect them to be this good. I did not expect Pascal to be this good. I didn't expect Freddie to be this good. I thought their roster issues would be more debilitating than they are. In fairness, COVID over the last little while has, like, you know, the Pelicans team that they beat last night was gutted. The Utah team previous to that was gutted. The Raptors have been gutted. It's just a weird year to talk about how good someone really is because no teams are complete ever. But it's been fun, and they're over 500, and that's amazing. Now, I sent you a text yesterday, and I said, take contracts out of it. Which player would you rather have moving forward? OG Anunoby or Golden State Warriors Andrew Wiggins? And you wrote back OG Anunoby. Why?
First off, Bob, once again, you were loud wrong. 35 and a half wins, baby. I banged that over and you're like, I don't think so. Yeah!
Are you going to start turning into this gambling guy? Because I know TSN 1050 now is basically like the home of gambling. Do you have to talk about gambling every time you talk sports now?
No. It's when it fits, when it works. Don't alienate a lot of the audience that isn't into sports betting, and just try to turn any line. Don't treat it as a moment to talk about betting, but treat it as betting, but also as a way just to talk about preview, review, and everything in between. So
okay. Right. So I got some sports business stuff I want to discuss at the end of this. It's a bit long in the tooth.
Yeah.
I want to get to it.
With you.
But yeah. Okay.
So. But no, I take OG. By the way, it is close. Good on Andrew Wiggins. He's averaging over 40% from three. What this comes down to me is that OG is a far better player defensively. We can see him score 20 points easily in a game. But my real thing is that last year, Steph Curry had one of the greatest offensive seasons ever. You know, just as a shooter. Yet despite that, Golden State was a below average offensive team, despite having Steph Curry doing things as a shooter we've never seen before. So I'm sorry, I got to look at some of the other guys. Draymond Green, absolutely, but Wiggins as well. I mean, those guys helped pull down Steph Curry last year. It's close, but I'll take OG Anunoby because I think I get more out of him that helps me win.
Now, the reason I brought this up to you is I was shocked. I don't know why. I was just curious. I went online to compare their numbers, and they're almost identical.
Yeah.
Almost identical. 19 points a game, equal number of assists, equal number of rebounds. And I started to read more about Wiggins because I'm not watching a ton of Golden State, and I watch the Raptors every night. So I know OG. But I didn't feel like I knew this new Wiggins that people were saying, you know, it's not crazy to think of him as an all-star. And his defense actually has been really good, Matt. And they tend to stick him on often a lot of nights. They stick him on the other team's best player. And where he's really great is contests. And when he's on a guy, that guy's shooting percentage goes way, way down. I looked into this, and I know of OG as a great one-on-one defender. Just great defender all around. Like, he's really good at steals. He's got, like, two steals per game, pretty much. But even defensively, I'm not going to say it was a wash, but I started to think if I could have one or two of these guys in the Raptors lineup for the next 5 years, and this is the Wiggins you're going to get, where he's playing hard defense and taking real pride in that and putting up 19 points a game, I started to think, wouldn't you rather have the guy who's the consistent three-point shooter?
I get that. It's just, I like, Wiggins is having this great year, but there sometimes that variance, it goes up and down. And what I'd like to see is how many of those are just wide open shots. And right now he's a better shooter than OG. No one's going to argue that, but I think there's still a ceiling for OG Anunoby to get better as a 3-point shooter.
I'm not going to be the person who says OG's brittle, but he does miss a lot of games. And Wiggins, apparently, and I was finding this online as I was reading, is considered this biometrically perfect NBA athlete. Right size, yeah. Right build, almost like a Ray Allen. If he takes care of himself, he'll be able to play at a high level for a really long time. And if he keeps that shot going, he'll be able to hit that shot for a really long time. I'm not saying OG's going to break down because of how he plays. He's obviously built like a bull. Spends a lot of time out of the lineup, though. And at a certain point, it's not fantasy sports. You know, you got to be in there to win.
No, and by the way, Bob, that right there is the best argument for Andrew Wiggins. He does not miss games. He plays every night. OG, his entire career has been marred with an injury. And by the way, sometimes it's just, you know, there's some people out there, some athletes, they've got a perfect body, but it doesn't matter. They're always getting hurt. I think of like a Christian McCaffrey, the running back for the Panthers. You know, there's just some guys out there that are always hurt.
Joffrey Lupul was always hurt.
Yeah, there's some guys where it just happens. And it's not because of devastating hit. It's a, you know, an awkward hit that leads to them missing 3 to 5 weeks.
So here's the other thing. I went and did a redraft of both their years. And OG Anunoby went 23rd, I think it was. And you could reasonably say he should have been top 10 that year. And probably would have been if he hadn't have been hurt in college when he got drafted. It dropped his stock and the Raptors were able to pick him up for a bargain. Andrew Wiggins, there were some players that clearly, like Joel Embiid, should have gone before him. But if he dropped to where he should be, he's probably like somewhere between 4th and 7th in his draft year 2014. So let's say, you know, one of the things we have here is the perception of one guy was chosen first overall and has not lived up to expectations. And the other guy was drafted 23rd and risen above them. But in their redrafts, they probably should have been drafted right around the same spot. So again, I think they're kind of equivalents. But here's the thing, though. I don't think Wiggins has been in a good situation until now. OG has been drafted by the best developmental team in the NBA. Arguably, he's been on a championship team. He's been around winners. He's been like, he's had every chance to succeed as a young player. He's got a great coach. He's got a great president. The facilities are amazing. Whereas Wiggins got drafted by Minnesota and they were a shit show. And then he goes kind of in shape. And then there was, well, he didn't get drafted. He got drafted by, you know, Cleveland and then got shipped out, right? Like the whole thing around him has always been this weird cloud. There's always been this idea that, well, he doesn't try hard enough. Kevin Garnett says, you know, he's one of the most gifted players I've ever seen, but he just doesn't love basketball enough. And we hate that. We hate that. But if we take all of that out and just look like who could have the better next 5 to 7 years, I'm kind of betting Wiggins might have the better next 5 to 7 years. Because he, one, has all the gifts. I think we've seen all OG has to offer. And two, he's now in a spot that's perfect for him. So now we're going to find out how good he really is.
And what I'm curious about is how will he be in use now that Klay Thompson who made his return against Cleveland. I want to see what his role is then. Bob, I'm going to give this one to you on 2 points. One, availability, health. And two, it is a good point about Andrew Wiggins started his career on a team that decided to draft Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn over Steph Curry.
I think they were 5'6" or 6'7". You know, so they had 2 picks in the top 10, and they took two guys who do exactly the same thing. One of them isn't in the league, and the other one is a reasonably decent player.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you this one point, Makowicz. We have 3 minutes left. You said you wanted to mention something in sports business?
Oh yeah, just The Athletic being purchased by the New York Times. Just thought it was really interesting. I really hope everybody who does a good job there keeps their jobs. But what it really spoke to me is how nice it would be to have good newspapers again. Like, I go to the Toronto Star every day. I do it online. I don't get the paper. And it's kind of gotten me through the pandemic in a lot of ways with information. And I just thought about, like, rather than ripping down newspapers, isn't it great to see some newspaper actually bolster its offer as opposed to just give up?
Yes. Well, we're both in agreement here. I buy newspapers all the time. When I fill in for News Talk 1010, I'll go and get a copy of the Star, the Sun, the Globe. You know, I'll grab 3 out of the 4 newspapers. And yes, I think society is in a better place with strong, independent newspapers.
When I first started at TSN 1050, without saying any names, we didn't have a subscription to any newspapers for the station. I had to request it. And the feeling was, well, why would we spend the money? You can get all that stuff online. And I remember thinking, we have a newsroom and we cover local news, you know, in the sense of sports. How could we not have a thing? So I hope it's good for the people at The Athletic. I think it'll be great for the people at The New York Times. And I'm just excited to see some legacy groups out there beefing up as opposed to laying down.
100%. Nothing else to add. I'm rooting for it. It makes sense. You know, The New York Times made a lot of money recently, so they can use the subscriptions from The Athletic. The Athletic, losing money. And I get why they are. Like, I read articles. I'm like, oh, there was a lot of research and time went into this. Oh, that costs a lot of money. So, yeah, I'm rooting for all of it to succeed. The Athletic is a big part of the research for my show, just as I buy newspapers and reading local articles are as well.
Buddy boy, it's nice to be back. I guess we'll catch up next week. I think I'm going to go up north this week, with Charlotte Online.
Yeah, get out of the city.
Yeah, 100%.
Bring some cigars, Bob. A nice cigar overlooking your cottage property. Ah, drink it in, you damn douchebag. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.